Thanks for listening to CarCast on Podcast One.
Hey guys, this is Chael Sonnen. Make sure you check out my podcast, You're Welcome. We talk about MMA, we talk about professional wrestling, politics, anything you need to know about today's top issues so that you can sound intelligent, and you get them all from me, your humble host, America's favorite gangster. Make sure you check me out. You're Welcome with Chael Sonnen. New episodes every Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday at Podcast One app, Apple Podcasts, and of course, PodcastOne.com.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on mandate. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. Thank you for listening to CarCast. I'm Adam Kroll. That's Matt, the moderator over there. DeAndrea, good seeing you, man.
How are you?
I'm good.
Busy, busy schedule.
Yeah,
lots going on.
Lots of car-related stuff going on. Lots of shuffling of the deck.
It's getting to be that fun part, you know, start planning for Monterey and some racing and the quail and food and drink.
Favorite time of the year coming up. Also, we never know about Goodwood, where they I got the word out there to Don Law Racing to see about finding a Cortina or something I could go around that track in.
How's he doing, that old chap?
I don't know, but I like that guy.
Yeah.
And it's a kind of a bucket list thing to do the Goodwood circuit. The hill climb is, you know, novelty.
Yeah.
Kind of fun, but it's just kind of a novelty. But the circuit would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, to get on that track. Mm-hmm. Like, it was cool to go, and it's a great event. And I can imagine, like, you got to get on that track at some point. The hill climb was cool.
Right.
Right? Like, you have to do it.
Right.
But, and then to do the revival and do the...
Yeah. Yeah, at some point.
Cortina would be like the cheapest car there.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just not sure. You know, I'm trying to figure it out. We're trying to get the Newman car dialed in. We got the 935 out there trying to dial that thing in. There's lots of dialing in to do. There may be another chance to get a ride with the Trans Am, you know, the modern day Trans Am car, maybe at the end of the year at COTA, try to figure that one out. Lots of possibilities.
Yeah. You know who I talked to recently is this, we were talking about this guy, Jim, who does, he's in Washington. Mm-hmm. He's the restoration guy.
Right. We love Jim.
He does, you know, he did the Bluebird that you have, and he did a Z car, right? We saw at Monterey a couple years, and just what a nice guy. He does such good work.
He did he's done a lot of stuff, but we were at the track looking at a Lightsinger 280Z.
Yeah.
And the Lightsinger, there's this sort of echelon of sort of racing guys, and, you know, you start with kind of the Shelbys and you go to the Gurneys and stuff like that. And you get these names that are just sort of synonymous with the racing. But at some point you get down the list a little bit, not too far, and you'll get to like Lightsinger.
Yeah.
And then you'll start realizing. And it's kind of like Don Devendorf or something, Electromotive. Like you'll go, oh, they raced 210s, and then they raced B sedan. The Turbo Zs.
Yeah.
They
did names you're familiar with, but if you start Googling them and you start seeing like really cool cars,
GTP
a lot
cars
of history
and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They just never, you know, they just never made themselves like super famous outside of the racing world, and they all raced in a world long before social media. So,
right, right. So, yeah, we're actually looking at the Lightsinger 280ZX, naturally aspirated.
Yeah, he did such a nice job on that car. Like, every detail, every hard line that he bent on that car, like, was done nice. But not in a way where he's, like, throwing money at it just to throw money at it. Like, did it all as proper and as, I guess, efficient as you could.
Yeah, and I have a Lightsinger ZX as well. Mine's just in more parts. but another project to take care of, as well as a Electromotive Z that was naturally aspirated. Most people know them for their... There's a famous... I don't know if you know this, but there's a famous cover of road and track. Could be car and driver, but I think it's road and track. And it's Newman standing there with his 280ZX turbo and the electromotive 280ZX turbo. And I think they put them like both through their paces. Does that sound familiar to you?
You know what? It does. And we may have a copy of that in the files for the Jim Fitzgerald car.
Oh, okay. So it looks familiar to you.
Yeah. I think I might have just scrolled through that going through the files the other day.
Well, be all that as it may, lots of car stuff, lots of settling. And there's road and track, and
that's not the one that I saw, but
there is the Newman Z, which is not a ZX, or it is a ZX. I'm trying to think, and then there's the electromotive ZX.
What year is this issue of road and track?
Well, it's like 79 or 80. It's ZX. Time, but I'm looking at the Newman car, and it doesn't look like a ZX to me. It looks like a 280Z or 260Z with the G nose, as they would call it.
So the magazine I'm thinking of, I think it has two cars,
maybe,
but Newman's standing next to it.
Yeah, no, maybe it is a ZX. I'm trying to think. Well, you got to go into the pages. It's 1980, so we'll figure it out. But either way, lots of racing stuff to prepare and lots of stuff to do. You're going to get some cool cars coming up.
Yeah.
What do you got coming?
Well, we're going to test an F-150 just because,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's a huge investment for Ford. We're going to tool around in that. I'm not sure exactly which one they're sending me. I don't know if it's two-door, four-door, EcoBoost, or V8, or whatever. Mm. They just said, you want it? I said, yeah. They're going to send that over. I'm going to do a little trip, go pick up the Mira and come back. And then two other cool cars. At the end of this month, we're going to test the Aston Martin DB11. Finally, like a new platform. You know, their DB9 platform has been around for so long.
Mm-hmm.
DB11.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these cars, I'll do live Facebook streaming video on these things. So we'll do a little walk around and a little drive with these cars. But also, I'm going to be driving the McLaren 570S. And we have an event coming up. SoCal Speed Shop does their open house Friday, June 16th. Mm-hmm. It's the first year without Pete Shaporis.
Mm.
Since he passed at the mm-hmm. beginning of the year. But it's going to be a big event. I'm going to bring the McLaren down there. So hopefully it'll be... And we're going to be doing Shift and Steer live down there. So SoCal Speed Shop in Pomona.
Nothing says T-Bucket Hot Rod like a
like
McLaren.
Yeah, that's why I wanted it. I was like, I want to bring something really different down there that'll stand out. Also, it'd be easy to find us doing the podcast. Just look for the crazy supercar.
Remember I decided I wanted that job... Like, my idea is, like, I got a pretty good job, but I got to go out on stage for 95 minutes and sweat through my undershirt and write a bunch of material or write a book or do whatever. Like, you know, I get paid well, but it's a little bit of a calorie burn, my gig. And I want that job where the guy comes out and he's got the beard and he's telling everyone about Chevy.
Yeah.
And then...
The guy in the commercial?
Yeah, but I've decided I don't want his job anymore. I want the guy who witnesses the new truck. Like, the guy just walks out, and then they dump the cinder block into the bed of the Ford, and it dings it up because it's aluminum, and then they do the Chevy. And then I just go over there and overstate the obvious. I go, this one's got a hole.
Yeah.
And then I get paid. You know? Yeah,
except they actually staged that as, like, a real event. It was, like, in the convention center in downtown L.A., and they got real customers. And the reason why they did that, in my mind, is so they can pay them $35, not, like, a real rate. But every time they say a word in the commercial, they get, like, an extra couple of bucks. So then they start vying for, hey, man, tell me about the aluminum, and how much weight did you drop in the truck to see if they can get something in there? But that's a genius idea from GM, because they're like, this is how we put seven people in a commercial and pay one guy.
I'm still looking for that gig. There's a new one where, like, Chevy's unveiling new trucks, and the guy's like, looks like a monster. You know, they just say stuff. Or I will accept the chick who, like, when they're lifting the cars up and the cars are all strung together with cables, and she just goes, there's another one.
Yep.
You know, that kind of thing, where I just want any gig where
that's
I just...
That's a bonus. That's a cash bonus, by the way.
Overstate
that line.
The obvious. You know what I mean? Like, we can see it's moving. I'll start with... The door's opening when the doors are opening. You know what I mean? And then I'll go, there's a car. And there'll be another car. And I'll go, and there's another one. And there'll be another one behind it. And then I'll just go, pay me, bitch.
I like Chevy. I like the Chevy trucks. The Camaros are cool. The Corvettes are cool. But there's a great parody of that commercial where they're showing bits of the commercial and they cut the guy and the guy's like, award for initial quality. He's like, what the hell's initial quality? And then he's like, does the research on his phone, Google. He's like, oh, it's good quality for 90 days. Then after that, it's crap.
Like, really?
It was a great parody. He was just kind of digging into the, cutting himself into the commercial going, I don't know what any of that means.
Deep web. Better or worse than when they took Adam Sandler's movie Jack and Jill, the trailer, and cut it into George C. Scott's movie Hardcore?
Did you ever see that one? I saw that.
I'm embarrassed
to say that I think I saw Jack and Jill.
That
but
is,
I don't think I saw the trailer for
that
it.
That is the best. We're going to watch this thing right now.
Here it is.
I just love this one. You got to have the sound, though, Max Pata. It's George C. Scott sitting in a theater. Family, there's one person. Turn it up. Drive you a
little crazy. I gotta pick Jill up at 4 a.m.
She comes once a year, and she's leaving on Sunday.
Sitting in a theater, looking uncomfortable.
Jack, no fighting this year.
There's no escaping it when it's your sister.
How we doing?
Your twin sister.
Are you going bald?
Huh?
No, you're getting fatter, but your hair doesn't realize it needs to cover more face.
He's just wincing.
From the producers of Just Go With It and Grown Ups.
And Jill are so alike.
Are either one of those movies good, by the way, Just Go With It or Grown Ups?
She isn't subtle.
Jill, this is
awesome. He got paid $20 million apiece, probably.
Nice to meet you.
He's homeless, right?
Are you whispering with a bullhorn or something? Everybody hears you.
This fall.
Seriously, honey, can't you try a little harder?
George C. Scott.
Guess I love who is it. Taking you to the Lakers game?
Finally, some twin time.
Compliments of Mr. Pacino.
What this? This is insane, man. You gotta call him.
Oh, but you stop, ready. You know all he wants to do is take Twister with
George
your sister.
George C. Scott is so comfortable.
Daddy, you know how to jump rope?
Who were the devil?
Al Pacino's in this movie.
Is forever.
I crave this family time.
When I was, I'll tell you about that trope of Al Pacino.
When he's crying now.
I mean, George C. Scott's crying now.
On the same street. When I look at her, I see me. When I look at her, I see me too.
And Jill.
That's my favorite. When I was 9, and Fred Flintstone would dress up as Fredalina, the like Spanish maid, but he still looked like Fred Flintstone, but with a lipstick and wig on. And Mr. Rockaway, the boss, would show up to Fred's house for dinner, and he'd be like, "And who is this enchanting siren?" When I was 9, I was like, the guy still built like Fred Flintstone.
Yeah.
He's got a wig on. Like, why is Al Pacino attracted to Adam Sandler with a wig on? Like, I don't feel like you could stuff enough into that bra or get high heels that were high enough for me to show up. Oh, there is Fred Flintstone. Yeah, you could take John Goodman and put him in the summer dress, but I wouldn't like come walking up to him from across the party. Wow.
So is the beard.
You never introduced me to your friend.
Yeah.
Who is this
vision?
All of
a sudden, all those chins just got sexy.
Yeah, I don't know why they even did that, but all right, I get it. That was Hanna-Barbera. They're horrible and they're hacks, and that was 1962. But why would this trope take place in the modern era? That's. How come no one ever raises their hand and go, why would he be attracted to? He's Al Pacino. He gets to bang 27-year-old cocktail waitresses if he wants. Why is he attracted to this?
Yeah.
And by the way, toward the end of Act 3, when he says, "When I look at you, I see myself," it's not covering it. That doesn't cover what I've just brought up.
No.
That does not cover that.
I would just be disappointed in myself.
Yes.
All right. How's that go with Pacino's agent, by the way, going, here's a comedy. I think you should do it only because you're going to get $12 million.
I don't think he gets paid that much.
But for a comedy, right? You know, like De Niro would never do a comedy And then you put him in something with Ben Stiller and he gets $20 million and he's like, I'll do these all day long.
I think a lot of it has to do, like, at a certain point when you become an actor and when you become a roofer or anything, it just goes to, like, how long? Where are we going? Like,
yeah.
What's it doing? Like, how many days? Like, how,
yeah.
Can we knock out all my scenes in 2 days? Like, I don't want to go to Montreal to shoot this thing, and I don't want to go to Prague. Like,
yeah.
When we're shooting, where are they shooting? Here.
So you're,
how many days? 3 days. Okay, let's just do it.
You're Pacino. You're De Niro. Somebody goes, look, 3 days in New Orleans for $3 million. You just do it.
Or better, 3 days in Orange County. Like, let's just shoot it. Let's yeah. just do it. Like, and, that's...
Like, and you don't need to leave the hotel. Like, we'll shoot your stuff in the room.
at a certain point, at a certain age, with almost everything, you just go, how long, how much?
Yeah.
How long, how much? How long, how much?
Or you know? He's just like, well, my wife's blown through all the money on stupid ideas, so I got to go make $3 million.
Yeah, and look, people do this thing where they go, when do you have enough money? And that's not really the question. It's... When is, you tell me, whether it's, you know, Bill Clinton or Obama or whomever, you tell me, forget about how much money you have. You tell me when it's a bad idea to get $400,000 or $500,000 for a 55-minute speech and they fly out privately.
Like, oh, yeah.
You tell me. I'm going to flip the script. I don't care how much money you have in your bank account. You're going to get $500,000 for 55 minutes of talking, and all you have to do is tell warmed-over stories that you've told a million times. And
if there's not a lot of prep, it's better.
And you'll just go out there, and people will be delighted, and there's a little Q&A thing yeah. at the end, and you'll take some pictures, and you'll get back on the jet.
Yeah.
When is that ever a bad idea? And you go,
especially
well,
if you want to buy a car.
He's got $150 million in the bank. What's he need? It's like, what's he need? When are you going to say no to $500,000 or $300,000 or $250,000 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And that's how you get, nobody ever talks about it, but that's how you get these guys. That's how you get the corporate gig. That's how the Sultan of Brunei gets Justin Timberlake to play the kid's 16th birthday. Because I don't care how rich you are, $5 million for a night's work works for Justin Timberlake.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
On every human being. Yes.
Yeah, you hear about, like, the guys having the private parties, you know, or a corporate gig, and you're like, how do you get Sammy Hagar or Katy Perry there? You're like, $500,000. That's how.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're going to do it.
Absolutely.
They don't have to write new songs or anything for that, by
no.
the way. They just show up, bust out, you know, 60 minutes of their tunes
no,
and go home.
I don't know how much Elton John has. I'm guessing it's way more than he could spend in his lifetime, but it still sounds like a good idea for
yeah.
Elton to get $500,000 for a 55-minute set.
Yeah.
Okay, calls, questions,
yeah,
what
some,
have
you? Yeah, we have some emails. And if you want to write in, please go to carcastshow.com, click the contact page, write us a little letter, and we'll read it on the show and answer it. Yeah.
Let me hit AMSOIL first before we move on. You move beyond stock performance. AMSOIL synthetic motor oil combines top-tier synthetic technology with unique additives to protect up to 25,000 miles or 1 year in between oil changes. Not bad, right?
I love it.
Shields your engine from wear and deposits. Wear on pistons and cams, and that leads to loss of power. We do not need that. 75% more engine protection against horsepower loss and wear than required by the industry standard. Piston cleanliness, 93% above the industry standard. Let's get this stuff going, people. It's tested in the field, on the track, in extreme conditions. AMS oil. You know how much we love
it. Seems like oil is starting to get better than the engines we're putting it in.
No kidding. Come on, engine builders. Step it up now. AMSOIL.com. AMSOIL.com/carcast for more information. AMS oil. Devoted to protection. All right, question.
All right, since we're talking movies, Craig from Pennsylvania, he wants to talk about bad movie car chases. And he wants to know, what's the more ridiculous movie car chase scene? Chuck Bronson's F-150 in Mr. Majestic, or Schwarzenegger going down the hill in his Blazer in the beginning of Commando?
I don't recall the Charlie Bronson one.
He was a peaceful melon farmer.
What is he not?
And then they took out his family, and he went out for revenge.
Very angry.
And we started at the top of the show talking about trucks and truck commercials.
Yeah.
Ford made a commercial.
They put Charlie Bronson in it?
It was funny because it was Ford. He was either F-150 or F-100. I don't know how old it was. Probably an F-150. They would say, as seen in the movie Mr. Majestic.
Yeah.
They would say a stock or a Ford F-150, and then they'd go, with some suspension modifications. Like, yeah, well, now it doesn't count,
and
right?
And a stunt guy and a roll cage. And
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Like the steering wheels on the Mustang 2 were made out of authentic simulated wood.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Aston Martin uses 007 to sell cars, and the cars we buy don't shoot missiles. So, yeah. I mean, I guess there's a little bit of imagination involved.
Well, we'll run the commercial, and you
all
can
right,
hear.
Yeah.
And by the way,
this already I could tell this is the equivalent of like Evel Knievel jumping on the old bikes versus like a new bike with a nice suspension and
yeah,
everything.
Like a Raptor.
You know, like a bike that weighs half the weight as it back then. Like this versus a Raptor.
Yeah.
This looks painful.
Yeah, let's listen.
Tough pounding in these scenes from the movie Mr. Majestic. This Ford is a used
just bent the frame.
And it wasn't modified to take this terrific beating. Now, these exciting movie stunts have no bearing on normal usage, and this doesn't prove how long our 76 will last. But if you want a tough-built pickup, that's Ford. 93 out of 100 of all Ford trucks built since 63 are still on the job.
Except for the 7 from this commercial. They wrecked everyone.
Oh, yeah. The suspension wasn't modified. They just had to throw it out after they got done destroying it.
Every car was trashed because that's the...
Did they have twin I-beam suspension?
Those? I don't know.
That,
I'm sure it's just
that's
sort
Ford.
Of...
All right. So, look, the phoniest thing ever on... So Mr. Majestic was a humble melon farmer, and then they took out his family. Now he's out for revenge. Commando, you got to find the scene. They're driving. The guy's driving the yellow with the whale tail.
The Porsche. Yeah,
Targa.
That's later in the movie, though.
That's later in the movie. And they're just going down Mulholland, just mashing into each other,
yeah.
mashing. And then the car eventually ends up on its side.
Yeah.
And then after Schwarzenegger ends up dumping the guy,
Sally,
off the cliff, he then comes back, pushes the car back onto its four wheels and hops in.
Yeah.
And we get to see the car, first off, with a stunt driver in it, which is comical. Like, all you have to do is a 3-point turn.
Yeah.
Like, Arnold, put the car in reverse, back it up, then put it in first and pop the clutch and go off down Mulholland. We really need a stunt driver.
Yeah.
To do this, you're Mr. Universe 7 times over. You can't drive a stick. Like
He probably can't drive a stick.
I am curious on like the stuff you use a stuntman for. Like every once in a while, like you'll just see a movie like from the 80s, and it's like, oh, Rob Lowe gets thrown to the ground, you know, but it's in an apartment and it's nothing. And it's like, that's clearly a stunt guy, but why can't Rob Lowe just fall on the ground? I feel like I would do it. I feel like I could get into that car and drive it away without a stuntman doing it.
You probably could have pushed it over and drive it away. If I remember correctly in that movie, for a split second when he first drives away, it's not damaged, and then it is damaged again.
That's the most disconcerting part of the whole film. It's a brand new car when he throws it back onto all four tires.
Yeah, but you're forgetting he's got two great lines. He's holding Sally over the cliff, and he goes, remember, Sally, when I promised to kill you last? That's right, you did. I lied.
Right.
And he drops him, and then later she goes, what did you do with Sally? I let him go. Schwarzenegger and his one-liners are the best. So, but the beginning of the movie when he's driving down the hill in the Blazer,
mm-hmm.
I don't remember, maybe you do, were the brakes cut?
Probably.
And he was just hauling ass down the hill, trying they were looping back and forth on the winding road, and he was just going straight down to hit them. But I think maybe the brakes were cut.
They used to do a lot of cutting of the brake lines.
Yeah.
You could kill your wife if you just cut her brake lines.
Oh, yeah.
It was an easy way to kill somebody back then.
By the way, how do you put the car in reverse?
Oh, no. What it is they pulled the distributor.
Yeah, oh, and he just pushes it down.
Yeah, he pushes it down. That's right.
Did he push it or a stunt guy push it?
He can push. they pulled the cap and they took all the wires and they left the wires.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they did the cap, but he got the Blazer. Is that a Bronco?
It's,
I feel like it's more of a Blazer.
Yeah,
it's
a Blazer.
It's a Blazer. He got going, and he pushed it down the hill, and then he jumped in. Now,
so does he also not have brakes? Because I'm trying to figure out.
Well, it would have a pretty hard pedal. He didn't put the key in. The key should... Did he start? No, he can't start the car.
Well, he must have put a key in because the wheel's not locked. Let's
he
assume
should have
he's
put
got a
the
key
in. He should have put the key in.
Yeah.
And now he's driving in his Blazer down the hill.
He needs a seatbelt.
And he's just popping down the hill. And he's steering pretty easily because the car would have power steering. And it would have
it wouldn't be power steering without the engine running.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It'd be really hard to steer. And he'd also have a vacuum assist on the brakes, right?
Yeah, if the engine was running.
But we've established the engine
is not running. I haven't seen him like hit the brakes because there'd be like a camera shot of his foot on the brake and then like a stupid look on his face.
Yeah.
So let's assume the brakes work. He just doesn't use them.
Right.
And he's trying to hit these guys.
Yeah.
He's going down the hill. And he misses.
And I don't feel like they're doing a very good job of avoiding him.
No, which I feel like they could have slightly sped up or slowed down. No problem solved.
really had a cigarette.
Yeah.
Like by the side of the road. Problem solved. Yeah.
So, but later in the movie when he's chasing Sally, I think it's Sally, in the Porsche, what was he driving? Like a Triumph or a Fiat
he's
or something
driving,
convertible?
I think it's a Sunbeam Alpine.
Yeah.
Could have been a Tiger.
Yeah.
But I think it's an Alpine.
Yeah,
but I think
you can
it's
only tell
by
the sound.
It's a Sunbeam.
You're gonna be able to hear it,
right?
Yeah. See, there it is.
Yeah, we don't know if it's.
Doesn't he like rip the seat out to get in it?
He does something. He also does a move where he's coming up on Ray Dong Chong, but he's looking at her in his rear view, but she's ahead of him.
There it is. Yeah.
Oh my God. For those who don't know, Adam's watching the scene and he called that a split second before it even happened. Yeah. So that was from his brain.
I had to rewatch that like 9 times. Like, why is he looking in his rear view mirror and spotting Ray Dong Chong and then she comes running out in front of the car?
Yeah, that's a terrible edit.
I think that's called bad editing. And then she's doing that thing of, what are we doing here? But then she's jumping in the car with him. Like, I feel like my deal is if I want to know what's going on, I'll let you take my car, especially if it's an Alpine.
Yeah. And she's bitching about it the whole time, by the way. You steal my car, you rip out the seat, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
You know, and he's just.
Yep.
I didn't even see a rearview mirror because.
That's right. Also, the rearview mirror is missing. Yeah. So he looked into into the sky, I guess, or, or something. Because, the rearview mirror was removed.
Well, maybe he was just he was going like full Anderson Cooper, just rolling his eyes. Oh, come on. Come on, Ray Don.
Yeah. Well, I guess the question was, which of those two movies is the better or the worse of the car chase?
I guess more ridiculous. I mean, Adam's hot on the whole Cobra thing, so everyone's watching all the bad 80s movies now.
Mm-hmm.
As they should.
Yeah.
There's also a scene in that movie where he then goes to, like, the weird factory by the airport where they're packing the drugs or whatever, and he climbs up the water spout, and he goes up to the second floor, and it's like a bunch of corrugated rusty tin on the outside of this thing, and he just like pulls it off, just like yanks this big sheet of corrugated steel off the side, and like they're all just working in there.
Can't hear
like,
anything.
No, there's like guards and stuff, and then he has to like slide in, but you do understand. It sound like a thunderclap, like you pulling corrugated steel off the side of the building. I feel like almost everyone in the factory would have stopped.
Just look
up. The fuck's going on up there?
Yeah, no.
Nope.
Not going to happen. Director said no.
Also, the guy who's playing the antagonist, the henchman, the heavy in this movie.
Yeah, the Australian guy.
He's like...
He was in Road Warrior.
He's very Freddie Mercury for a guy who's supposed to play an antagonist.
Because he was also in Weird Science at the end, the motorcycle guy.
Yeah, he's just a weird... he's weird because he's not exactly buff.
He's kind of like chubby, but he wears like the
chainmail.
The chainmail and...
Yeah.
You know, like... First of all, that looks like it's going to clip a nip.
Yeah. That's a nip clip. It's like every once in a while when you see the pro wrestler... But he doesn't, like, his arms aren't that big, and he doesn't really look that good in his underpants, and you're like...
Back when they got paid with cocaine and not money.
Yeah, like, well, what are you doing here again?
Yeah, he's got a shirt underneath.
Like Freddie Mercury.
He does. This guy did 3 movies, Weird Science, Commando, and Road Warrior that we know of. And then he did like Swiffer commercials.
This is he didn't strike fear into my heart. And the other thing too is when they always get to that big ultimate fight scene at the end, and Schwarzenegger's been kicking ass times 10 all movie long, and then you have a tough time at the end with the guy who looks like Freddie Mercury.
Yeah.
I'm like, wouldn't you make short work of this guy?
Because he said, I'm not going to shoot you between the eyes. I'm going to shoot you between the balls. And then he stabs the guy with the pipe, and he goes, let off some steam, Bennett.
I see a lot of it now because a lot of the action movies are against, they're against all the nerds and all the tech guys. Who, you know, so they're skinny, and it makes sense for them to be like that. But back in the day, you needed like a bigger
But that's more believable than like Zoe Saldana being a hitman.
Yeah.
You know, she weighs 87 pounds, and she's beating up like the entire Colombian military. Like, I'd rather see this guy.
I feel like the whole martial arts thing took away the height weight advantage because now they do as long as they can do that whoosh sound when the person throws a spinning heel kick then she snaps back into her position, they can kick as much ass as they want. All right. Any other questions for us?
Oh, yeah. This is from Mike. He's from Long Beach. He has a car custody battle. Mm-hmm. Hey, guys, I'm getting divorced. I got a 2005 E46 M3. I've spent the last 3 years transforming into a dedicated track car.
Mm.
I've hauled this car all over the West and tracked it on a regular basis. My wife would join most of the time. She never participated in the maintenance, the cleaning, the fueling. She just got in, drove, and got out.
Sounds like Lynette.
I know. That's how I figured you relate to this.
She like gets out, tosses her helmet and Hans device at me. It's like, it's a little too much understeer.
Plays a little bit about the handling.
Cracks a beer. Tells me to dial in a little more camber.
A little sway bar.
Put a little more sway bar and take out a little camber, she says. And then she goes, I'll be in the trailer.
Don't fuck up again.
That's right. That's classic Lynette, right?
His wife, she's never aspired to move beyond beginner group. She says the car is now part of her, though, as well.
Oh, I do love that.
Yeah, so I purchased a 2009 E92 M3 that has a modified exhaust, big brakes, tune, and some aero, but it's still street legal, and have offered it in place of the E46. I see it as a great alternative for her, but she wants the E46. For her to take the track car but not the trailer or the tow vehicle seems to be a spiteful move, as I've poured my heart and soul into this car. What do you guys think I should do?
First of all, this dude's whipped. Don't make any purchases in the middle of a divorce. Mm. Right? Like, as soon as she says, I want out, don't start buying anything. Right? So don't go out and buy an E92 and be like, that's a negotiating ploy.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I like the idea, though. Like, when my parents got divorced, it was like, who wants the futon filled with horsehair? Not me. Well, me neither. Well, someone's got to throw it out. All right. See you in hell. Okay, great. That was the negotiation for my parents' divorce. Yeah. Like, I'm just going to find some apartment in North Island. I like at least that there's some BMWs.
Yeah.
And there's some custody of some BMWs.
I know. This sounded like a family I wanted to hang out with before things went badly.
The fact that she wants the car but not the trailer and or the tow vehicle or whatever.
It sounds like he might have messed up.
She's angry, right.
Yeah.
All right. So, he's got the new car. The new car is streety.
Yeah. Expensive.
Yeah. I would say we're looking at the new car.
Yeah, that's the actual one he sent.
So, it's not about dollars with her, right?
No.
Because selling the race car versus the street car is, you know, the street car is way easier.
Yeah. I think we're looking at the old car and the new car and the trailer and everything else.
Cool BMWs, though.
I don't know. What do you think you could get a track-ready E46 for? I feel like high teens, depending on how much junk was done to it.
Yeah, you know, and they're starting to go up in value a little bit. I mean, I guess if you want one that's like high miles and whatever, you know. But even if you just bought a car that wasn't race ready, you know that you're going to be spending money on roll cage and fire suppressant system and suspension and wheels and tires. If you buy one that's race ready,
I don't know if those things need a bottle with a system in them for track days.
Yeah, I mean, I probably just need
a fire extinguisher.
You're right, for a track day, I guess. But if she was doing some sort of bumper to bumper racing, it'd be different.
I feel like they're doing events and track days and Oh, how about you buy, how about you go race spec Miata, or you get a Honda 2000 that somebody else has done a bunch of stuff to, and you just use your new Honda 2000.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, probably pretty inexpensive. It sounds like he messed up and he's got to give her both cars.
They're both a part of her.
Yeah, like.
Yeah. I just the fact that she went with you to these track days and got in the car sounds. I don't know what you two are getting divorced about.
Yeah,
that sounds like nirvana to me.
Yeah, you already won.
Yeah.
Now the other way you look at it is she's insane and he needs to get away. In which case, you still got to give her both cars so you can get away.
Right.
You know, like that's the payoff.
I agree. It's that kind of thing. Yeah, sometimes. I don't know.
She may have purchased both cars.
My wife's...
and he's the one trying to...
My wife's friend was saying something the other day, like, oh, Monterey sounds pretty good. It's not... But of course, it's always boys' weekend away. Why don't you let the girls come along? And I was like, because they have no fucking interest in it whatsoever. Nothing. Like, I'm not keeping them away.
Yeah.
I've never... Natalia and Lynette have zero interest in this, as best I can tell.
I think they never once said... Should I go or can I go or what's cool there? They pretty much said, have a nice trip.
How long you gone?
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead and put it in the wall, would you?
Yeah.
So you'll be gone 4 days, but if you put it in the wall, you might be gone 6-7 days. Yeah. I don't know, but there is no interest amongst Sonny has a little bit of interest in it. Sonny likes chilling with the dudes.
Yeah, and he's, like, super easy, so we wouldn't know the difference if he was uncomfortable or not. He's just super chill the whole time. You're like, Sonny, you want to go to the aquarium, toss the football around? Yeah. Sonny, you want to go to the racetrack? Yeah. Sonny, you want to go Cannery Row, watch some cars? Yeah.
Yep. That is him. All right.
So he's into everything.
Or he likes not into anything.
Like, but he likes his modern supercars, you know. Like, he was pretty excited about the Enzo and the Pagani and some of the cars we saw.
He does. He likes, I think all young boys like the notion of a supercar. There's something, you know, sexy about a supercar. When I was his age or younger, I recall when I was, you know, 7 or 8 years old, the sexiest car that I could imagine was a Dino Ferrari.
Yeah.
I think I had like a Matchbox yellow Dino Ferrari, and I thought that was the coolest shape in the world. But I didn't want the Chitty Chitty Bang Bang car, and I didn't want the Stutz Bearcat or the Duesenberg. I wanted the coolest 1973. That was the coolest car shape there was, like, to me. I guess I didn't know about a Lamborghini Miura because I just didn't see them. I never saw them. But they made a couple of these like Matchboxes. I remember going to like the Cherry Hill Mall in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, and getting the 1/18 scale or whatever it was. The one was about 3-4 inches long, and that was like the coolest thing ever. I loved the ducts. To me, the doors and the ducting that's built into the doors was just the coolest shape ever. And by the way, they made a lot of those cars, and they have a V6 in them, and, you know, 196 horsepower or something, and they're not, you know, 0-60 and 7.7 or 3 or something, you know.
Yeah.
Not exactly impressive. So I'm not as blown away by them as an adult, but aesthetically, an amazing shape for the early 70s.
Well, we've got the McLaren coming up. You can pick up Sonny from school. He'd be super excited, and you'd be kind of the douchey parent. Just driving around in the McLaren.
There was the...
They'd be like, oh, he's a lawyer?
The difference between
Beverly
men...
Hills lawyer?
The difference between men and women, I'll tell you in a second.
Well, that can go pick him up in the McLaren.
Oh, that was one of my... That was one of our great arguments. Because I make this mistake of treating women like either dudes or human beings sometimes. And it's a mistake. It is a mistake. Because I literally just say, like, sometimes I'll just treat Lynette like I would treat you or Max Pat or anyone else. Like, here, do this and do it. I'll tell you the funny story with the Gallardo. But first I'll tell you about CarShield. Ah, sooner or later, you're going to break down, man. And if you're lucky, it happens while you're under warranty. A new engine, transmission could cost $5K. Oh, easy.
Easy.
Easy, man. For those BMWs? Oh, are you kidding me? Especially, what is it, the E96 or 94? I'm trying to think.
V8.
Whatever it is, it's all up there. Anyway,
Range Rover.
Get the extended coverage. Do like I did.
Yeah.
CarShield.com. CarShield makes it easy. Select your favorite mechanic. Go to the dealership to do the work. No checks or waiting for reimbursements. CarShield gets the mechanic paid directly, plus 24/7 roadside assistant and rental while yours is in the shop. So save thousands in potential repairs. Get the ultimate in extended vehicle service protection. Let's go. Visit carshield.com/carcast. Save 10%. Believe me, when the warranty's done and that engine goes, oh, good gravy. carshield.com/carcast. Save 10%. carshield.com. A deductible may apply. Go to carshield.com. Yeah, we were... I know you've heard this one before, but it was one of these things where they gave me a Lamborghini Gallardo for a few days to drive around. And I was having fun because I lived up in the hills and I was working in radio, and I had to leave my house at like 5:30 in the morning, yeah, every morning. So Mulholland was just wide open at 5:30 in the morning, and I was just having fun in that car. And at some point, Lynette said, I want to drive that car. And I said, good, let's go up to Mulholland and have some fun. And we lived across from Mulholland in the Hollywood Hills. And there's this thing where we took it across the bridge and she stopped. And like one car came down and passed us in front. And then I saw like a truck, like Mr. Majestic's pickup truck filled with melons. But this was filled with like... tree trimmings and stuff on the back, like a big steak truck or something. And it started lumbering up Mulholland, like in a granny gear. And I was like, hit it now, turn left, go now.
Yeah.
She's like, truck's coming. Good. Go now.
Yeah.
Go.
Get in front of
and
that
at a certain point, I do all I can do is just yell, go, 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 go. And she's like, stop yelling. I'm like, just go now. And she just sits. She like completely freezes up. And I'm talking to her like I'm talking to you or human or something like that. And the truck goes by and then she just slides in behind him. And we go on the world's slowest Mulholland run. Like we're going 17
with
miles an hour.
Flying out of the back of the truck.
And I'm just sitting there going, okay, well, this is what we're doing now. And she's like, you didn't have to yell. And I was like, I was yelling because I said go 7 times in a normal tone, but the last 6 times I yelled it because I knew we were going to get sucked in behind this guy and we're going to get trapped. But it is an interesting thing, which is like when you go to driving schools and you get in the road on the car with instructors, you know, the guy will just reach over from the passenger seat and start grabbing the steering wheel and turning a little more and pushing your leg on the accelerator and then turning a little more.
Yeah.
And you just got to go, well, I guess he knows what he's doing.
Yeah. Might as well trust the guy.
Might as well just trust the guy. And I think as a dude, I have so many years of, you know, for me playing football, for you like ROTC and like getting yelled at by, you know, pilot instructors and stuff like that. Did you just have this modality where the guy says go and you just go?
Yeah, just do it.
You just do it. But I think for a lot of people and women, particularly if you don't grow up in that kind of coached up all the time, when someone is yelling go, the more they yell go, the more you just stop. Because you're like, hold up, I'm not doing anything. Like if you yell go with authority and multiple times, you'll actually get the opposite, which is I'm not moving, which is the opposite of what we think. But I think it's sort of human nature.
Yeah, I think the human nature default, like you said, is to not go.
Right.
But I think the other way can be trained. I don't think you have to be born with that. Like that just takes some yelling, some arguing, or you know, like you said,
it takes
like
some repetition,
some
sort
of training. Discipline, like martial arts or some sport or military or something, and it trains you. But once you get trained, I think you're stuck with it. Like you have it forever.
Yes, you know? that's what happens once you get stuck with it. Or once you have it, you get stuck with it.
Yeah, there was it's a better million, to have it. You should yell at your kids. Everyone should yell at their kids.
There's a million.
That's what I'm getting.
They used to do a million drills when I played Pop Warner football, even high school, I think. they'd get everyone lined up in front of the tackling sled. They'd have like the 7-man sled, and the defensive line coach would get in the middle of it. He'd be standing on the sled. He'd be in the middle of them, like a 6 or 7 man or whatever. I'd tell everyone to get in their stance, and everyone would get in their stance. And they'd get lined up in front of the sled to like fire out onto the sled. But it was a defensive drill. So he'd like hold the ball out in front where we could see it down toward the ground. And he'd say, you're not moving on the count. You're moving on ball movement. When that ball moves, you go. Okay. You don't go on count. And he'd just hold the ball out and he'd just go down, sit, sit, hut, sit, hut, sit, hut. And some guy would lurch forward and he'd go, everyone's going on a lap.
Yeah.
I didn't move the ball, but Higginstaller moved. Everyone's going a lap. Thank Higginstaller. And take off. And when you come back, we'll try this again.
Oh, that was the worst.
And they try it again. And yeah. If a guy like fell forward, a guy like lurched forward, like up, go on. Thank to Giacomo. Take another lap. Let's try this again. We'll keep doing it until. And then eventually you just kind of learn, I'm going to look at that ball. And when the ball moves, I'll fire out. But I'm not going off his set hut anymore. And after enough of that, you just kind of, that becomes your modality. Yep. Whatever that guy said is what it is.
We're all like puppies. It's all about repetition. You know, you just keep teaching us and teaching us and teaching us. But like you said, even military stuff, ROTC, CAP, all that stuff, like when you're training for state competitions, regional, national competitions, it's just a lot of repetition again and again and again and again and again.
You would train with like the sergeant of arms stuff, like spinning the guns around and stuff?
We would do a bunch of different training. We weren't like a color guard or an honor guard, so we weren't spending, but it was a lot of like drill. And then there's physical fitness stuff. So you like run a mile, you play volleyball. So everything is just constant training, teamwork training.
Yeah.
And like all your drill command stuff, you just got to listen to the guy, you know, left face, right face, about face, all that stuff. And you just got to do it, do it, do it, do it.
Yep.
You know, every step you take has to be exactly the same, the exact same, getting like 12 people or 15 people, the exact same stride, the exact same rhythm.
Right.
You know, like you just got to do it 100,000 times.
There is something to that that is more valuable than any motivational book or college tuition classes, what have you. There's something insanely valuable about it that we completely and utterly dismiss as a society, decide it's kind of for either like jarheads or jocks or something, and do not realize how much that is relied on a daily basis by guys like me and Matt and everyone else I know who's been through that kind of stuff. And the fact that we've decided that there's no real place for that anymore for our youth is insane. It is absolutely insane.
I loved it. I love the discipline of it. I love the rules because there's no arguing. You know, like, here's the rule. It's written down. That's the rule. It's not open for debate. So you either do this or you don't do this, and everybody's on the same page. Yeah. And that's what I kind of liked about it, you know?
And I never took it personally ever, no matter what the coach said or no matter what the deal was or who you're sitting on the bench and this guy's starting in front of you or whatever it is. Never thought about it for a second.
We were talking, you and I were talking this weekend about these, I get these emails from these car brokers and this wacky dude that you were with us at one point, Chris. We met this guy up at the track and I was just like, I was on the phone with you. I was like, I don't understand. Is everyone a pussy or a shyster? Because I can't figure out the lack of like discipline and just commonality, common sense that people have. Like, I didn't get it. I was like, everybody we've been dealing with on trying to sell cars and stuff is just, it's just like a pussy or a shyster.
Yeah. There's used to be something.
There's a few champions that are both.
No, but it used to be, look the guy in the eye, shake his hand, my words,
that's
my
it.
Bond, all
that's
that
it.
Kind
Do
of stuff.
Do the deal.
It's not, we're not living in that world anymore, and I'm not happy about it. All right, you got another one, Max Pata?
Yep. This is from Adam. He's from L.A. He just got a new Alfa Romeo. Mm-hmm. Hey, guys. I just recently restored it. My 1973 Alfa Romeo Spider.
Yeah, I was going to say, what new? I mean, it could have
like
got
a Giulia or a 4C.
Yeah,
but
he didn't just buy that or something. Go ahead.
I've always washed and waxed the car myself, but with the new paint job, I'm considering finding a detailing service that offers a high-end wax for the initial coat. I've heard of clay bars, rotary machines, and finishing pads, hard care Nuba waxes, and protective polishes to create that deep, wet look, but don't know what's best for new paint. Do you guys have any thoughts of how long I should wait before applying the first coat of wax and what the initial coat should include? Any advice would be appreciated. Love the show. With gratitude, Adam.
Well, first off, congratulations on joining the Alfa Romeo Club. My first recommendation was get you some of that extended car assurance Adam was talking about a minute ago. You're going to need it. the car warranty stuff. You're going to need it. But freshly painted car. Like, I'd say, you know, other than the process of whoever painted it, maybe color sanded it and polished it.
Yeah, it's probably got a clear coat, right?
Then from there, I think it really needs to settle. It probably needs a month or so to really.
I am all for getting a professional who does this. You know, the thing about cars and the detailing of cars, it's sort of right up there with the guys who paint the cars. There's the guy who does, you know, the Earl Scheib kind of thing, where he's just putting duct tape over the insignia on the hood and painting, spraying right around it. And then there's a real paint job.
Yeah.
And you pay for it. But there is a wide chasm and a wide range of the guy who shows up in the van and washes your car in your parking lot at work, and the guy's a professional.
Yeah.
You know, like literally a scientist.
Right.
At this
the guy
stuff.
Who charges $30 versus the guy who charges $300.
Right.
And it's one of those arts that only comes with experience. And I have a lot of respect for that. Like,
I do too.
This guy details like a black paint job car.
Yes.
How do you do it and not screw it up? You don't. You have to have 15 years experience.
And it's not the time to save $60.
Right.
This is not that time. So I would say, consult with a real professional and let a real professional lay down that base, and then you can, in subsequent weeks and months, go back and detail and wash and wax and whatever. But get the base going by the pro.
Yeah, I agree. That because you did that initial paint job, and hopefully that painter did, you know, the polishing or the color sanding and the polishing. And then when you go to put that wax on, you just need a straight up wax initially. You don't need the over the counter cleaner wax.
Right.
That's got too much product in it. You know, you just need a good wax on it. And then from there, you maintain it as you would any car.
And when you're looking for insurance, go with Geico. Geico.com. 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on your auto insurance. Why not? Go. Speaking of professional, let's go with Geico, man. These guys know what they're doing. Hop online. Check out what's going on at Geico.com. Spend 15 minutes. Could be saving 15% or more. What else is there to say? You want some extra money for some Carnauba wax? Geico, man. Put that extra money in your pocket at Geico. So you got all your list of things to do. This one doesn't involve leaving the house or the apartment. Just hop on the computer and go to Geico.com. All right. You want to check out any live shows I'm doing? You go to AdamCarolla.com. You want to check out me and Dennis Prager, NoSafeSpaces.com. You can watch a little trailer of the movie we're working on over there. Of course, The 24-Hour War. Everybody loves that movie. Go check that out. And why not get the Blu-ray of Winning, Racing Life, Paul Newman? Everyone likes that. And The Bug with Ewan McGregor. We got that movie. Chassis, CHASSY.com. We're doing a bar crawl with Lynette. That's June 24th. Tickets are going fast. Ray's going to be there. Loxie's going to be playing. Max Pattis Band is going to be there. And just go to the website. Go to carcastshow.com. Click through our Amazon banner. Show us a little love. Shift and Steer. How about that? Matt's podcast.
Yep. Live show, June 16th, SoCal Speed Shop, Pomona.
Oh, there you go. Yeah,
shiftandsteer.com.
Shiftandsteer.com.
So, thank you.
Till next time. Adam Carolla. For Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea, saying keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Carolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
of drinks, comedy and music tour, live music, stand-up comedy, and buttloads of mangria. June 17th in Long Beach at D Piazza's. June 22nd in Fresno at Sequoia Brewing Company. And June 24th in Seattle, Washington at Showbox Soto Lounge. With special guest comedians and bands in every city featuring Loxy. Baby, let's roll. Plus, comedy from Matt Edgar. Tickets and more information are available online at CorollaDrinks.com. The Corolla Drinks Comedy and Music Tour. In Seattle with Lynette Corolla and Ray Oldhopper. In Long Beach with Mike Dawson and the Smokin' Kills.
Standing in the backyard, looking for a tree to climb.
June 17th in Long Beach. June 22nd in Fresno. June 24th in Seattle. The Corolla Drinks Comedy and Music Tour with Loxy and Matt Edgar. Get your tickets now at CorollaDrinks.com.